I had to retake ethics from my Mennonite professor, for whom my skepticism didn't fly. The first time I made mincemeat of the standard propositions establishing the so-called moral science, and I declared morality an offshoot of aesthetics, and got a failing C for my defiance. So next semester I back to divinity school trotted, proverbial tail knot between my legs, and spent the
and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Acre.
I'm Rob Saffer. I create and produce Overlooked, a show for underplayed and overlooked music of all kinds. I'm also a dedicated WGXC listener. I love the other music shows, the news, and the better weather is the best. Because I listen, I pledge. I'm a sustaining supporter. Because community radio matters now more than ever. Go to wgxc.org/donate and donate. Thank you.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by SunCommon, supporting vibrant communities across New York for 15 years, offering custom solar installations for homes, farms, and businesses. Information at suncommon.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Marcus DeGrazia Acupuncture of Austerlitz, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
90.7 FM.
Acre, Hudson, Catskill.
Good evening. Thank you for joining. I am Kimberly Y. Irwin, your host of Race Talk on WGXC 90.7 FM. We're here every third Tuesday of the month from about 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. This is where we have the very necessary conversation on race and ethnicity. Why talk about race, you may ask? My answer is to simply combat racism. Race Talks, where no
topic is taboo.
Okay, that is my non-synchronous yesterday. That they actually know each other, so I might bring them on willy-nilly, not following too much of our pattern, but I'm going to get to you, them, Zanetta Graham and Nakia Tillman. And we're going to talk to them. I'm going to give you more information on them in about 3 minutes. I want to highlight this July segment. We know we have a very wonderful woman as SCOTUS, the Supreme Court of the United States, Ketanji Jackson. However, it wasn't quite possible for her to be there to have a decision or to give her remarks for a decision that was made. So we're going to talk about that decision because it's on Roe versus Wade and the effect of it, I should say, the effect of this decision on Roe versus Wade. And that's what informs us in our race series, which is on health and wellness. So our topic today, of course, is race and reproductivity, for that, and that being women's reproductive rights and welfare for them in this manner. And I say them, though I am a woman, I'm including myself too. So we're gonna get to that. We also have top terms, DEI, diversity. I love to say exclusivity, but it's equity and inclusivity with the B, belonging. And what does the B mean? You know, why are we adding that? And if we have time, because again, we're expecting a really vociferous conversation today, but there's a Black Women's Health Study audio that's been prepared to kind of guide us into the fact that Black women's health is not the same as every woman's health. And so I'm going to talk about Black women's health more so today because we have two women on that are African-American. And we also have Ketanji Brown Jackson as one of the Black women that I want to discuss what her words are about, because again, she didn't have the opportunity to have a vote on this, but I still want to give her a voice. We also have code words. I introduced this in one of our past shows, and the code word is mixed. So I kind of want to get to what does mixed mean in the context of reproduction, and of course, how do we get to reproducing anything anyway? Sex, love, and all that good stuff. So what does it mean when we're mixed? And we have Mr. Clarence Thomas, another SCOTUS, to thank for bringing up that term today. And I'll have some words about what he mentioned, because he is sitting on the Supreme Court of the United States, and his words were very well heard, and many people are not so much excited about that, not even the people of his own party, which is that of the Republican Party in America. So I'm going to break all that into, of course, talking to our guests and following up, hopefully, with a introduction to an audio, again, a Black Women's Health Study, to showcase the fact that women of all ethnic makeup need to be really recognized so that we all have the best health and wellness that our community and culture can afford us. Okay, so on to the good stuff. And I want to mention, before we actually introduce my first guest, the SCOTUS ruling. I don't want to just say it without giving some background about it. So I'm going to take about 3 minutes, hopefully not more than that, to just go through some of what I just mentioned. Highlights, I have my newspaper articles here. And actually, one comes from an educational source, the Harvard Review. So I'm going to get all into that. So what is Roe versus Wade anyway? Roe versus Wade, of course, was a decision in 1970s. I believe it's 1973 that allowed women the rights to their reproductivity and allowed a future, 50 years, where women did not have to worry about back alley abortions or going to jail or dying, actually. So this is what was in effect overturned, the opportunity for women to have control over their reproductive rights, their reproductivity. And what made this strange occurrence is that the very people who said when they were going to be affirmed as judges for the Supreme Court was that they really believed that that was law, meaning law not to be messed with. It's already been voted on. It was spoken for, no changes. And of course, the moment enough of the members who are Republican Party got on the court, that was one of the first things that they sought to strike down. And I can't really say there's a negativity there. People say they're going to do something and they get it done. Applaud, applaud. The thing is, so many people, the majority of people who are representing a vote here, they don't want it. Republican people do not want it. I actually have a wonderful friend who is a Republican, and she, about 25 years ago, shared with me, and she doesn't know who I'm talking about, so I can't say I'm giving over her confidence, but she was a woman of color, that she was pregnant, and her first thought, because she was in school, was, I think I need to have an abortion. And my question to her was, how are you going to do that? Not because she didn't have the right to in America, but because she didn't feel that women should have the right for abortions because she was a Republican, a card-carrying Republican. George Bush II was running for president at the time. So I know that even now, Republican women of all ethnic groups will feel some kind of horror for their children, and for the, you know, the care that is supposed to be given to them by their primary care physicians. And now in many places, it's against the law, but not in the U.S. because in the U.S. we have, in New York State, because in New York State, we have a predominantly Democratic government, and we don't have to feel the real pains of this law, at least not initially, because it's states' rights, right? And states rule. And we have a governor, Ms. Hochul, hopefully she wins again, that makes sure that women in our state don't have to really have the burden, especially those who are impoverished or in or of color, who on average don't see the same type of good health care as the majority, the women in the majority experience. So my first guest to talk about this and being insightful in her professional and personal life is Ms. Miss or Vice President Vinetta Graham.
Oh, you can say Vice President. I like that.
I like that too. That's why I threw it in there, Vice President. I love Vice Presidents for Black women, right? It's kind of like rolling off the mouth. Mm-hmm. So Vinetta, I don't want to read something stale. Tell us as much as you would like to about who you are.
Oh, as much as I would like to.
Okay, so we have 2 minutes. No, just
I know, right? Like, where do I start? Honestly, in short, so thank you for the introduction. So my title is Vice President for Education and Corporate Compliance Officer. I've been with Upper Hudson Planned Parenthood for 7 years, which is so crazy and has been so lovely. And I essentially oversee the education department. So our job is really to go out and do the education for all age groups. We do students as young as fourth grade, all the way up to senior citizens and senior citizens' homes, because they're still getting busy and they still need to know how to protect themselves. I really do love my job. Outside of that, I'm also an adjunct professor at the University of Albany. I teach in the Gender and Sexuality Studies department. I'm teaching this fall for an undergraduate course. And I mean, beyond that, I'm Black, I am a mother, I am very passionate about maternal health, about reproductive health. We were talking a little bit before we got on air about my four-nager, she's my little teenager and a preschooler body. So, you know, I am a mother. I'm still kind of a new mom, so to speak. She'll be 5. And, you know, I've always been passionate about reproduction, reproductive health, how policies affect our bodies, it affects our welfare. And then especially when I became pregnant, more than ever, I was really invested in how these systems impact us, especially women of color. So I'm always excited to talk about this subject. Can talk about it all day. So thank you again for having me, Kim.
Well, it's a pleasure. And I didn't know you to be a mother of a young woman. So your conversation is going to be really great. Specifically on a personal level, I know that, like I said, I wanted to mention some of the top statements that people are talking, stating regarding this new ruling. And, you know, the science is there. We're talking about how it can be harmful, how abortion restrictions could affect care for miscarriages. Already, African-American women are very low in having pregnancies without any issues, so that it's a real, you know, it can be, pregnancy is actually, or can be, more dangerous than having an abortion if it's required. Mm-hmm. Also, we have abortion pills, which are very safe and effective, but these government rules are going to prevent or hinder access to them. And one of the things that about Latin America abortion laws that they hurt the care and the economy of the Latin American community. So it's very, you know, when we talk about raising reproductivity, a lot of people want to focus on, you know, the fact that it's an abortion and that there is a stop to a pregnancy, and that people are stopping the pregnancy at a time period with which the fetus is considered a human being. Can you mm-hmm. share any of your organization's viewpoint or your own personal viewpoint or history on just this topic? How is it affecting, in your opinion, or in the science that you're aware of and that you might be teaching as well, about this scourge, the end of Roe versus Wade?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, it probably goes without saying, I just personally, I was very personally just devastated by the news. I think a lot of folks are. I remember that day being particularly emotional for myself. I'm in my mid-30s, so Roe has been around for as long as I've been around. I never really imagined a world without it. So the initial shock of it was really painful. It was really painful. And then immediately the reality set in, because I do work for Planned Parenthood. We're synonymous with Roe v. Wade and providing abortion. So just immediately having to recalibrate how we look at the work we're going to be doing. It's already impacting, you know, our services. It's impacting the way we do education. Immediately students begin to ask about the ruling and things like that. So it got really real, really fast for myself. And the biggest thing, or our biggest standpoint on this, is I want people to understand that it overturned what has been made illegal is safe abortions. That's what's illegal. People are not going to stop getting abortions. You know, it's like anything else that is legal or illegal. It does not stop much of anything. What it is going to do is make it less affordable or unaffordable, and it's going to make it dangerous. Because as long as, you know, women have been able to get pregnant, you better believe women have been attempting to terminate pregnancies or, you know, end pregnancies for many reasons, which are for them to decide because it's their body. So I just feel like this ruling in particular is just, it's just really painful. And just it just makes me kind of sad, like how politicized our bodies are. And just that feeling of lack of control, a lack of autonomy over your own body, especially something as intimate as reproduction, because you don't see any part of the body that's so heavily governed, that's so heavily politicized, right? You can go out and get breast augmentation and nose jobs and this and that, cut your leg off, but you know, when it comes to the uterus, right, there's all this policy about it. So it was just definitely really painful. And then, you know, added the fact specifically as a woman of color, as a Black woman, it's also not that new. Our bodies have always been governed. Our bodies have never actually really been our own. And so I just feel like that was kind of like a double hit to us, especially because contrary to kind of popular belief or maybe misconception, there's a misconception that more white women are getting abortions. And if you look at it, they are, but it's because there's more women, more white women. But statistically, Black women are disproportionately getting abortions. We are at a higher rate. And so we are directly and immediately impacted by this ruling for some of the things you already started to talk about, Kim, which was, you know, our issues in the healthcare system to begin with, you know, the historical racism, how we're treated. It's hard enough just to get us to get into the doctor's office, right? We're statistically less likely to be insured, have lower income. So there's already all these things that are barriers to getting healthcare. And so when you slap something like this on top of it, it's going to have a really disproportionate and really negative effect that we're already starting to see. Essentially it's really heartbreaking. And what a lot of folks don't realize is that, again, like you explained, essentially the ruling overturned, it eliminated federal standards, right? So it sent the power back to the states. What most folks don't realize is that these states, especially your Louisiana, your Alabama, Texas, they have been waiting for this day for 50 years.
Idaho, Tennessee.
Idaho, Tennessee.
South Dakota, Kentucky.
They have been waiting. They have been waiting and they have been working and then they've been plotting and planning and chipping away at abortion rights. And so what we've already started to see is a lot of trigger laws that went into effect, right? As soon as this was overturned, you have places like, you know, Texas and Mississippi are, you know, putting things into place almost overnight.
No, most abortions are already illegal in these places, especially after about 6 weeks of pregnancy.
Yes.
So the fact that they're doing even more, it counters, you know, intelligence. And I, before I forget, because usually I like to just jump in and interrupt, but I'm practicing here. to make this point, because it's not a point I wrote down. It's something that just came to my mind because you spoke about it. You know, what makes our country so different, I believe, is because we don't separate church and state. What it's not really political, it's really religious. That came into the political fray for this purpose. Before, you know, when we talk about slavery with women, Black women's bodies, you know, no one cared, right, about whether the African American mother slave has a child out of wedlock with, you know, by being a rape victim of an owner or some other person on the plantation. So there was no one caring whether the child is, you know, brought to term or not. It's really because everything, you know, really wasn't any central understanding in the law about this type of thing. Women just in general did not have any real rights. And so they didn't need to have a government rule about it, right? Because there was already a personal and social law regarding women. No rights for them, but when women got the right to vote, when Black women were able then to take care of themselves, women were able to get bank accounts and, you know, jobs. You know, after World War I, more women in the workplace allowed women to have money to be able to be established, not to have to go to school to get married, you know, for that purpose. So when you give a lot of women their own power, the state and then the people in the religious movement sought to take that power away, especially. Mm-hmm. So I just really wanted to bring up how religion plays a huge part in our government and our practices in the government. I don't want to take too long to get our next guest in because I know she's like, I've got stuff to talk about. No.
I am great.
And at the end, we're going to revisit everything that we say so that we have, you know, there's something else we left out and we want to add. But I do have a talk term and it's called mix. But, and so I'm going to ask you about it, but I want to give some background about why I'm bringing it up in the first place. We have, like I mentioned, I'm going to try to find it. I have the Harvard review. Harvard Law Review, which our former president, Barack Obama, was actually, I believe he was the first Black president of, I think it was president of the Law Review, that kind of showed that he was going someplace. But they've had an article out, it's called Racing Row, race as in R-A-C-E-I-N-G, Racing Row, Reproductive Justice, Racial Justice, and the Battle for Roe v. Wade. And this was written by Melissa Murray, and I certainly won't read all of it because I think it's 78 pages, well documented. But she does talk about someone that I thought was really interesting, Clarence Thomas, the Supreme Court Justice. Clarence Thomas, and I'm trying to find a good place to start reading so that we get an understanding of where I'm going here. It says, in May 2019, the Supreme Court issued a per curiam decision in Box versus Planned Parenthood of Indiana and Kentucky, Inc., a challenge to two Indiana abortion restrictions. So you mentioned these states that already had really strong abortion rules. One makes it illegal for an abortion provider to perform an abortion in Indiana when the provider knows that the mother is seeking the abortion solely because of the child's race, sex, diagnosis of Down syndrome, disability, or related characteristics, which is familiar, right? People do, doctors will tell parents, prospective parents, about the shape of the chromosomes that they find in their unborn fetuses. So, actually unborn children, which are fetuses at the time. So the court's position of the two challenges was not necessarily noteworthy. But what was noteworthy, she writes, was that one member of the court, Justice Thomas, wrote separately to share his views regarding the constitutionality of the Indiana trait selection statute. He explained the law and others like it promoted the state's quote unquote compelling interest in preventing abortion from becoming a tool of modern day eugenics. To this end, Justice Thomas proceeded to elaborate, she writes, a misleading and incomplete history in which he, Clarence Thomas, associated abortion with eugenics and the rise of the modern birth control movement. Now, the rise of the modern birth control movement, you know, people in Europe, many countries, like first world countries, they have access to these over-the-counter birth control methodology. So when he talks about in his writing then and in his writing now, very similarly, that he wants to end birth control altogether. And he, at least in that case, mentioned eugenics. For those of you who aren't familiar with the term eugenics, there was actually a eugenics movement, right? And eugenicists worldwide believe that they could perfect human beings and eliminate the problems of genetics and heredity. So this was something that, of course, people who believe that white Americans should just stay white supremacists, believe were some of the eugenicists were white supremacists in their belief that blacks should stay with blacks. And whites to stay with whites. And I'm saying this on purpose like this, because we know, or that what I like to put forth is, we are multi-ethnic. There is one race, the human race. So when we mix, we're just doing what we've already done. I'm sure I'm mixed. I don't know with what, because I haven't taken a gene test, but we are all very mixed. So I like to have people, or you guess, talk about what is mixed to you. What does it mean to be mixed? And of course, the eugenicist theory of racial improvement is false and quite ridiculous, but it can be horrible for those who actually think that they can breed a whole society. Hitler comes to mind, thinking he can breed white children, blonde hair, blue-eyed Germans. I have lots of German friends, and not all of them, in fact, the majority of them are dark haired and not blonde and blue eyed. So he failed. There's no plan B. But okay, so I'm going to introduce my next guest, and one of the things that she can talk about, along with who she is, Nakia Tillman, who I met recently at a wonderful party, and we're both children's authors, so we bonded immediately, not just because we have friends and family members who are close, but we share that together. So Nakia Tillman, please let them know about you, your book, what makes you, click, and as far as this new Supreme Court ruling, and of course, identify, I'm going to throw mixed at you. What does mixed mean to you?
So being, I did go to school. Well, let me, I am Nakia Tillman. I am born and raised in Albany, New York. I work for Trinity Alliance as a family support specialist. And what I do is if there's a family that has come through CPS or referral, I go in and assess the children five and under to see if developmentally they are okay. And if they are not, I refer out and just kind of help the family to get the support they need for the children and help the parents understand the child's development. Because a lot of times as parents, if we don't understand the development, that causes frustration. We don't understand that a two-year-old is supposed to be a little terror or jumping off of things and eating their boogers, right? We automatically want to stop, shame, and you know, and we should correct behavior, but it's not to, it's to give them the understanding of that things are natural. Like these things are happening. Like you cannot be surprised by what any child does, whether it's eating candy, doing whatever, and they're sponges. So I help the parents understand that because that takes the pressure off of them and that helps to manage their stress so they're not taking it out on their kids, because I deal with a very vulnerable population that's already under the microscope of stress and CPS and you know, the maybe their kids might be getting taken away from them. So I deal with that aspect of the community. The word mixed, it brings up a lot of things.
Sorry, one, Nakia, because you mentioned that, I want you to answer or state a little bit more about the fact that children, right? You mentioned in a conversation before that there'll be more children being born. So how does that play a role in what you do?
So with the Roe versus Wade being overturned, we're going to see a lot more children being born maybe in those stressful environments. You know, maybe, you know, a mom may have been violated and now she's chosen to keep that child. So she has to manage her trauma and then seeing this baby and then trying to educate this baby as best she can. And what is that going to look like? Or, you know, we were talking about, you know, the chromosomes, maybe a family might have a child that's going to be born delayed. You know, what is that going to look like? It's a lot of services that they're going to need. It's just going to be a lot of added people in that person's life, you know, and as mothers, you know, in our minds, you know, we pray that our child comes out, you know, perfect. You know, there is no perfect human, but that's just
when healthy and whole.
Right. Healthy and whole. And that's just something that instinctively that's what we do. And so when that doesn't happen, what does that look like on the other end for the child and for the parents? So it's just a lot of support. And, you know, I can say with joy that at least in my community, Black women, we have our babies, you know, they are some of us that we, you know, sought out Planned Parenthood, you know, for abortions, but we still have our babies. We have, there's a lot of little baby Black and brown babies running around our communities. And so it's wonderful to see, but also with the, what's going on, it might double, it might triple. And so as a community, I just want us to, kind of understand that children are still a blessing. It's not a bad thing. You know, it's just something that, again, we got to bring our women in. We got to bring the families in. We got to bring the men in and say, hey, these babies are coming. So how are we going to help prepare them for the world? Because it's coming.
Well, I love what you do. You mentioned women a lot. Are there any men involved in this training or education that you provide, and you provide it in the homes also, correct?
Yeah, I go to the homes, whatever they feel comfortable with, they can come to my office, but I typically like to go into the homes where they're comfortable. And I love fathers because fathers are interesting, because I always try to explain to the fathers that you're there, you're the protector, but you give something different to the children that the mothers don't. Because when the child hears the father's voice, it's a different reaction. It's a loving reaction, but when the mom is been, you know, if she's working or she's stay at home and she's doing everything for the children, when the dad comes home, that's such a big help. It lets her, she can go do her nails, she can go relax and kind of take over that part of the children. And it's like a fearless interaction. Like, you know, as mothers, we're quick to like, oh no, don't do that. You know, or kind of, I don't want to say stop the child's shine, but we're more protective, where dads just let the kids go. dads are like giving them that yin and that yang. So I tell them like, listen, you are such an essential part of the child's life, because that's that protection. Like, you know, when the dad's home, it's like, oh my God, my dad's home. You know, mommies are there to kiss the boo-boos and, you know, we do a little bit, but dads are so important for the child and for the child's mental health. Because I can say, as for me, you know, I lost my son's father when he was 3, and he went through a little bit of that mental health aspect in his teenagers, because now, you know, he's becoming a man and he doesn't have his father there. So for a lot of our young Black men, it's like, wow, you know, you may have a mentor, but it's that parent, that man, you know, to look at, even if he wasn't even around, the fact that he, you know, that he's still breathing, you know, but he wasn't. So it's like, we have a lot of young men that's going through a lot of trauma that I don't think people understand, with the absence of a father, whether, you know, if he's in the home or in the ground, it's our kids are going through a lot right now. And so I don't think there's enough talk around that as well.
I don't think that we talk about mental health enough. I know that I'm part of a grant siphon where people send me a lot of grants, and there's many grants now available for organizations that work with people on mental health. They really want the fact, especially in communities of color, and I'm using that term broadly, all communities, right, that can get that information to the community, because that's the one thing that I think we still don't talk enough about, is our health in that regard. But since we are talking about reproductivity, I am going to now throw that question to you about mixed, and then I'm coming for you. I know you've been preparing in your head. I saw your eyes. No, I'm just But yeah, and again, I'm just going to preface it with the fact that if you don't know, I'm going to tell you now that Clarence Thomas has a wife who is of the majority community. She's what one would consider a white woman. Very vocal recently. We're not going to get into the politics, but for him to really feel this way, it can be understandable. And yet for him to choose to undo rules and laws that were made by the government, by our federal, our judicial system, is really striking, because one of those laws was the Lovings law, in which said that Black and white people can indeed get together in a man and female, male and female kind of way, and procreate and have a loving home and family environment. That's a law that was not nationalized in the Loving case, and I think that was in the 70s. I usually have an assistant here who can look it up for me, but since she doesn't, I'm just going to go tell you guys to Google it real quick if you need to know before. But so I asked you the term because of that reason. You know, I don't know if he has any children, but what does this terminology mixed mean? And then maybe in your professions, has it made a difference what the ethnicity of the children is, how they work in the environment that you mentioned?
Oh, you just, now do you want to take this or?
No, you're first.
You're first. Yeah.
I am mixed. I have a lot going on in my background, white, indigenous, Native American. So, but I present as Black. I'm a Black woman. And so, and that's what I stand by. So it's interesting when you say mixed, you know, like you said, we are part of the human race, but we understand that when you combine Black and white, you're not going to get pure white, pure Black. Sometimes you can, I mean, because we create all the colors. I'm just going to say that we are responsible for every color on the planet. But
you mean Black people.
Black, yes.
Black women, yes.
I find that law very interesting. But I'm not surprised with him, because with that comes privilege and power. And when I speak about privilege and power, especially with Clarence Thomas, he is a Black man who is a Supreme Court judge with power and privilege. So it doesn't affect him. He's already played in the pond. He has his white wife and he has his white children. So that doesn't affect him in his mind, because he's already been able to achieve what he wanted to achieve and do what he wanted to do. And the poverty and the that's not going to affect him, kind of like the slave owners. They had many, a lot of Black children, some they kept, some they released, but that stain did not affect them. They still were able to, you know, be who they were and do what they were without any type of, you know, repercussions. So that's just, for me, for him, that's just history repeating itself just with blackface, really. And I say that unapologetically, because as a Black man, knowing the history of your predecessor, you know, who came before you, for you to stand on that and rule the way you do have, I don't understand it, but, you know, I'm not surprised, especially with his history of not respecting women, period. Especially Black women, and we won't get into the Anita Hill thing, but it's just that men with power and privilege, I think they think they're above race. You know, some people, I don't see, you know what I mean? Like, oh, I'm I've achieved this and achieved this. Yeah, oh, that's good for you, but race still played a part. You know what I mean? Whether it was positive or negative. And so, yeah, he's just, it's interesting. And with my job, the mixing, I'm just going to go right on and say it. I hate to say pretty privilege, but I noticed that when I'm dealing with families being pulled apart, I noticed that the white or the mixed kids are treated a little bit differently than the dark skinned kids, than the fully, you know, the Black kids. That is, I see that a lot. No. I see families. I see how the white mothers, if the fathers are Black, I see how the treatment is very punitive for the fathers and not for the white mothers. So out of things, as though they're looking at the situation of, you shouldn't have had a baby with this man in the first place. This is why you're in the situation that you're in. So
when you say they, are we talking about people in an organization or...
Let's say the system. So the system, and the system is pretty much designed how it's been designed.
Welfare and family kind of system.
Right, sex, yes, you know, all of those systems that are there to help and really designed to keep the family together and to protect the children. Yeah, that is right, exactly.
I have to say, I gave her a look like, I don't think so.
UPS is designed to come in if there's a trauma or a danger to the child, to come in and see what is that danger and to give the family support to try to fix it and really to try to keep the family together. It's the initial design is not to tear it apart, but to try to fix what's broken. But what's happening is that, you know, it's with the trauma and when you have to see and deal with it, people's bring their own experience to any trauma. You bring your biases, you bring you to the job. So that affects how you do your job. And so what we see is that there's a lot of racism in this. It's a lot of gaslighting to Black women. It's a lot of wanting to criminalize and penalize a Black man. It's a lot. So when I get into the family, and I'm just dealing with the children, but I have to deal with them in a very loving manner and try to educate families, and then all of that, I see that going on, and sometimes it's a very fine line I have to walk, you know, with the families and dealing with the children, and just so they're not re-traumatized and so that they can have the best possible but start and move forward, and because eventually I step back, so what do I leave them with?
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to piggyback on that, because you are working with the family, and we talked about systems and the social welfare system in the 70s, late 60s even, really penalized Black families. In order for a woman to have any kind of sustenance help from the government, they had to not have an able-bodied male present. And that meant that their husbands sometimes had to walk away and leave the family, leave their wife, their children, even though they were in love and the relationship was wonderful, because he couldn't get a job. And that meant he couldn't support his kids. And instead of seeing his kids hungry, he stepped aside. Now, that wasn't the case for all men, but even one family that has to have their breadwinner to leave because first to last to hire, first to fire. There were real racism that struck through the family in so many different ways. So that's kind of where the legacy that you're still dealing with. And Planned Parenthood, and you're from the Upper Hudson Planned Parenthood, Planned Parenthood location. It's like a system that's also designed to help, to be treat people with human dignity. And it just seems like because of that, the government just pounced on Planned Parenthood to try to force it to not be serviceable. And it's horrible. But I want you to get in here and you can answer and discuss anything, because we you take it away. Mixed was one of the first things.
I mean, thank you, Nakia, for sharing that. Like, I wish I could, I'm not sure how much I can really add to that conversation from a professional standpoint, right? Because you do direct services versus I'm more in education, and we are interacting with people, but it's not nearly as intimate as going into someone's home and like seeing their family dynamics. So I'm shocked and kind of sad to hear that insight, right? To hear about these children being, treated any differently because of their skin tone or their perceived race or ethnicity. So that's something never even conceptualized. And I'm definitely fortunate to hear that.
Well, you are in education, right? You're teaching a class for the summer. What is the course title again?
So this fall, I'm teaching an undergraduate course called Feminist Social and Political Theory. So we talk a lot about the movement, and I kind of teach it from a chronological perspective, starting from Seneca Falls, et cetera, Right to Vote, all the way up into, transnational feminism, like third wave, what's going on present day.
Okay. So then race definitely will come in ethnic city conversations definitely come into play there, because there were women who Black women who were not too welcomed at the table in some respect, and had to section themselves off and create another type of union or group to foresee to help the feminist cause. But are you mixed? Would you consider using that term for yourself?
No. Am I absolutely. Like, I am, I know this for a fact, but I also, for me, it's how you're raised. It's your rearing, it's your culture. It's things like that. So I'm Black, I'm African-American for all intents and purposes. Right. How I present, people see my skin, they see the texture of my hair, and that's what they're assigning to me. So sometimes that, regardless of what you may think of yourself, you're actually beholden to what people, how they see you, and they'll treat you accordingly. It's very interesting. But I would never use that term to describe myself as mixed. When I think of mixed, I do admittedly think of people who have a lighter skin tone, who may have features that are ambiguous, or you may be mixed, right? For me, I don't feel like my features are ambiguous. I got a beautiful wide nose, dark skin, lovely big lips, I love it here, and I look Black, so I consider myself Black.
Are you sure you're not putting anything in your lips to them up or anything?
A little bit.
I'm just joking. Everything, right?
Mm-hmm. They really do, though.
We are sitting here and we each have a different type of hair style. So I want to talk about, it's kind of off the cuff, but when you mention a hair texture as a way of determining whether a person may consider themselves being mixed, and I would imagine in the case of being mixed with white, right, Black and white, or mixed in some way that will lessen the sharpness of one's features. Someone recently said unnatural, and it made me think, and again, this is an aside, but it made me think, almost everyone does something with their hair. We understand what the term natural is to mean in the Black community, right? It means the hair you were born with. And when someone mentions natural, they tend to mention shorter, curlier, coarser hair, which, you know, if you can have that, you can have almost any style you ever want to have, right? You can have a short fro, a big fro, you can braid it, straighten it, do almost anything with it. So it, to me, is the most, the hair in which you can, like, the world's your oyster as far as what you would like to do with it. And so your hair is shorter and curly, and you look like you have like a natural afro. And then we have, because I want to like share what we look like to to those who don't see us on air, since we're talking about it. And Nakia, would you say you have?
I have the crochets. My natural hair is this really the size of Zanetta's. I have a short curly fro, but I got tired of trying to pick it. So I put the crochets and I cornrolled my hair and put the crochets in. So these are crochet twists.
And crochet twists are like, to me, the new phenomenon, right? It's like people used to add braids, but the crochet, it's so much.
I love it.
But I have to admit that I'm a little bit plain Jane. Straightened hair, a little bit longer than shoulder length. But yeah, I had this style and I used to change my hairstyle all the time. People used to be like, oh, Kim, what are you going to wear your hair like next? But I became 24-ish. And I just decided, one-stop shop. I just kept doing the same old. But we're three Black women, decidedly Black, and with three different hair textures, because we just want to, for whatever reasons are. And we can do that. Everyone should do that. You should do what makes you feel better. And if somebody somewhere wanting to plump up their lips to make them juicier, make them juicy. Just don't spend the money for the children's food.
Right. Make sure that
people first. Guys, we're running out a little bit of time, so I want to share with people a little bit about how they can connect with you if they'd like to. But I also want to mention this radio station, WGXC 90.7 FM, is a Wave Farm org. I should say Wave Farm organization. I was going to say the website. And we are having a drive this month. And like every institution that is needing support from others, we would like to ask our listeners to help us continue our 10 years of radio. You can donate by giving online at wgxc.org/donate. You can give by calling 518-697-7400. And you can even mail, you can snail mail it, guys, WGXC-FM, care of Wave Farm, P.O. Box 13, Accra, New York, 12405. And this is an organization that allows me to come on and have race talks, the very necessary conversation, because if you talk about it, maybe you'll be about it. And I like the idea that our conversation helps further others to converse in similar ways and to make it, like I said, less scary to people. Also, what we're going to do today is my LinkedIn allows me to have an audio conversation with my listeners. So I've asked both Nakia and Zanetta to join me on LinkedIn, and they have accepted. So for those of you who would like to listen, but would prefer to join in because you have something to say, that's where we'll be at 8:15 p.m. on LinkedIn. Maybe you can still get an invite by finding me on Kimberly Y. Irwin. I think that's my LinkedIn name. So I look forward to it for you if you have anything you want to add to the conversation. We didn't get in DEIB. I want to get that in real quick. So diversity, equity, inclusivity, and belonging is what DEIB stands for. And I just had a conversation with a friend. She's a white woman, very well versed in all things race and ethnicity. And she has, I hope she doesn't mind, I'm not going to say what her name is, but she has a Black Lives Matter poster, I guess, in her front yard, just like, you know, people have vote for this person, vote for this person in their front yard. She doesn't have a storefront, so she has it on her front lawn. And I asked her, she added the belonging, because I told her DEI training, blah, blah, blah. And she said, and belonging. I initially got annoyed that she even mentioned belonging, but then I thought about it, because to me, when you're talking about including someone, like, I can include you in our LinkedIn event, but if you come and then I don't talk to you, or I snap or make it so that you can't speak, I don't allow for you to feel like you belong. So mm-hmm. It's one thing to be at the table, like Langston Hughes said, you know, he has a poem where he says he wants to be at the table when company comes. But there's one thing about being at the table when company comes, but if you're told not to speak, mm-hmm. we have a problem, Houston, right? So we want to add the belonging. Although, you know, it's another word, we want to add the belonging. So ladies, you can talk about how you feel about the DEIB, but I also want you to take 2 minutes to share how someone can connect with you. Of course, they can join us if they so desire, and I spoke about how, but I know one of you has a book that you're writing, one of you has a course that you're giving. Maybe you want to share with people how they might continue supporting what you do, or how you can continue supporting what they do. Share out. Whoever wants to go first, go first.
I'll let Nakia go first and talk about her book, which I've read to my daughter and love. So
awesome.
So you can contact me through Facebook, Nakia Tillman. I keep it very simple, nothing sexy, or on IG, my last name, Tillman Nakia First, and contact me that way. I have two books, actually. Her daughter, yay, she got my first book. It's called The Little Market, about my grandmother growing up in the South, and that whole dynamic of being a little girl picking cotton and all of that. Interesting dynamic. And then my second book, which you can find on Amazon.com, is called The Amazing Q, about a little Black boy superhero, because that's just what you need in your community. And so I wanted to write that book and center little Black boys, because you know, they are being targeted, they are being criminalized, and they need us, and we love them. And so, yeah, that's it.
Excellent. Zanetta, anything that's coming up for you?
Sure. Well, I mean, people can definitely reach me on Facebook as well, Zanetta Denise Graham. You can email me. My first name is Zanetta at UHPP.org. So that's short for Upper Hudson Planned Parenthood. And specific to Planned Parenthood, if you're interested in getting involved, because, you know, we are in New York State, while we are not being, you know, severely impacted by the overturning of legislation, like, we definitely are doing our best to show up for people who are getting services in the state, who are coming out of state. So if you go to our website, uhpp.org, you'll find a whole list of ways you can get involved. Come volunteer, definitely donate. That always goes a long way. But there's a bunch of different ways that folks can get involved. So if you check out our website, uhpp.org, there's a whole bunch of ways, small to big, however you want to get involved with the agency.
Wonderful. So we have a few more minutes, and what I was going to do right now was to showcase the audio from the organization I mentioned, Black Women's Health Study. They did a sleep study, and I thought it was important because they mentioned in the sleep study how even in sleeping, Black women and white women differ. Go figure.
Oh my goodness.
I know. And it's really a great, it's about 4 minutes and I can't get it started. So you know what I'm going to have to say? Join us if you'd like to hear it on LinkedIn. I'll try to post it on my Facebook. Yeah, so just the bare bones about it is I'm part of the study. Actually, so they sent me the material, and then I made an audio so that you could hear the most important parts about it. And the one thing that I would share is that they wanted to, there was a study that was done for both Black and white people, but white women didn't do as well. So they thought, well, I didn't do as well. They didn't finish the program. And so they wanted more Black women to finish the program so there'll be enough people in the study. So what they decided to do is get a group of people who are African-American women who are part of the general study of Black